on this evening's session, I think we can keep it fairly short. I think we've had a fairly long day today. To begin, maybe if there is any more questions about any of the things that we've covered today, now's a good time to ask that. So if anyone has any questions regarding either the mindfulness training or any of the emotional balance things that we did this afternoon. So if anyone has any questions regarding any of that, you can ask them now. No questions? Too tired? Yeah. Half open, yeah. day after tomorrow, when we look at the training, the mindfulness training using the mind as the object. In that practice, it's very much recommended to actually have the eyes open. And I'll speak more about the reasons for that then. But in general, if you have the eyes open, normally or even partially, we're not trying to strain the eyes. So blink as often as you need. We're not trying to forcibly keep them open. And we're not really focusing, looking at anything. So we're just sort of like vacantly in the space in front of us and keep them relaxed. Sometimes people try to deliberately unfocus their eyes, but that's straining the eyes, so we don't want to do that either. So neither deliberately unfocusing them and straining them, or focusing on a particular visual object, or trying to keep them open. Just let them, you know, it's like as if you're daydreaming with your eyes open, you know. Sometimes we're daydreaming, we're caught up in all sorts of thoughts, but our eyes are open, but they're not, we're not straining them, we're not trying to deliberately unfocus. They're just sort of vacantly rest in the gaze, in the space in front of us, that's all. No, you can leave your eyes as you normally have them when you didn't know. When you're counting. Anything else anyone would like to bring up? Okay. Then I'd like to do two things. Just review a little bit some of the things we've covered today so we sort of keep them fresh in our mind. And then introduce this evening's practice. So, again, in this retreat, cultivating mindfulness and emotional balance. And so within the cultivating the mindfulness, in the mindfulness training, we saw that mindfulness, how it's defined within Buddhism, is coming from the original Sanskrit and Pali words, smriti sati, meaning to remember. So mindfulness within the Buddhist context is simply our ability to remember the object, our ability to hold or focus on an object without becoming distracted, which, as I mentioned this morning, is a little bit different to how the word mindfulness is used in a lot of modern-day traditions. So I'm not suggesting that in a modern-day tradition this idea of non-judgmental awareness of whatever is arising in the present moment is somehow not valid. Yes, it's a good thing to do, but how the word mindfulness was originally used within Buddhism is a little bit different to that. It's again, it's our ability, this mental factor, our ability to be able to focus on a given object without becoming distracted, to remember the object. And within that training, the mindfulness training, we saw that it's important, not only in mindfulness training, but in any meditation, to prepare ourselves well at the beginning of the meditation. Preparing the body, speech, and mind, so that we are in a very good state to actually do the meditation. And in this particular training, of course, the qualities we're trying to develop is a very stable and clear mind, But here, in particular, I put some emphasis on this idea of relaxation. So again, I think many of us, when we begin meditation, we come into meditation very tight and tense. Our minds are very chaotic. And so, as we do normally in daily life, when we want to focus on something, we tend to apply a lot of tension in that focus. That's not going to work here, because we're just simply going to get a lot of agitation and fatigue, and maybe even start to complain about getting headaches from meditating. So it's very important in this training that the basis is a relaxed mind. So really we need to emphasize this as a beginner. Just simply relax, 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 relax. To highlight the importance of that, I'd like to read a little bit from this book here from Alan Wallace, Attention Revolution. This is all about this mindfulness practice, of developing our attention skills. So he says the following. This is on page 14. And he's talking about the practice of focusing on the breath, mindfulness of breathing. He says, thus, our practice of mindfulness of breathing consists of prolonging our awareness of our breath. While this requires an alert mind, such concentration should not be tense, but rather balanced. When we discover that we have become distracted from the meditation object, it may feel natural to clamp down more forcefully, tightly concentrating the mind. You can see this in the facial expressions of people who try to concentrate in this way. Their lips become pursed, their eyebrows draw together, and their foreheads become furled with wrinkles. They're becoming concentrated, but like orange juice, most of the fluidity is being drained from their minds. If you want to concentrate for a short time and don't mind the side effects of tension and fatigue, you can follow the above strategy. But if you want to follow the path of shamatha, and shamatha is the goal of this mindfulness training, shamatha is a particular level of samadhi that we're trying to develop in the Buddhist spiritual path, you'll need an alternative. I had to discover this fact through experience. During my first extended shamatha retreat, I was filled with enthusiasm. I wanted to take full advantage of the rare opportunity that was before me, for I was meditating in India under the guidance of the Dalai Lama. In fact, he was meditating in the hills up behind Dharamsala. There's some meditators' huts up on the hills there. That's where he was meditating. I had no financial worries, and my material needs were easily met. All I had to do was put the instructions into practice. I threw myself into this training with all my might. Each morning I would rise at 3:30, except once I slept in until 3:45 and got upset with myself for slacking off. Enthusiastic I was, but so uptight. The Tibetan manuals on shamatha meditation that I had studied over the years stated that the type of attention needed when one began such practice was, quote, highly focused. So I tried as hard as I could to keep my mind from wandering. Within a matter of a few weeks, devoting many hours each day to meditation, I could sustain my attention on my chosen object for up to half an hour. I was elated by making such fast progress. As the weeks went by, however, I found myself becoming more and more fatigued. I was draining myself both physically and mentally. My joy in the practice was diminishing accordingly, and I felt my attention was not developing any further. What was wrong? I was trying too hard. The cultivation of shamatha involves balancing the mind. And that includes balancing effort exerted in the practice with relaxation. I think this points to a cultural difference between traditional Tibetans living in the highlands of Tibet and modern people leading fast-paced lives, their senses constantly bombarded by telephones, email, the media, and noise. Years of such existence conditioned the nervous system and mind in ways that might have been considered torture in rural Tibet. One traditional Tibetan doctor whom I know once commented on people living in the West. So now he's quoting the Tibetan doctor who says the following. From the perspective of Tibetan medicine, you are all suffering from nervous disorders. But given how ill you are coping remarkably well. Whether we dwell in Boston, Buenos Aires, Berlin, or Beijing, our minds are conditioned to be more high-strung and engaged in compulsive thinking than the minds of Tibetan nomads and farmers living a century ago. So when Tibetan meditation manuals advise beginners to focus their attention firmly, the instructions are aimed at a very different reader than the average city dweller in the 21st century. Before we can develop attentional stability, we first need to learn to relax. So, very important. And I know from personal experience that the first thing we need to do with this sort of practice is really learn to relax, relax, relax. A relaxed body and a relaxed mind. If you can really cultivate a relaxed body and mind, you have a good basis for then developing a more stable and clear mind. As long as we're tight and tense, our stability and clarity of attention, maybe we can develop a little bit in the short term, but it's going to come at a huge cost. It's going to come at a cost of a lot of agitation, tension, and fatigue. And we won't be able to develop these qualities in any sustainable way. So we really need to make sure that we relax, 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 relax in that meditation. So here then, in this mindful training, these qualities develop, initially emphasizing relaxation. With a relaxed mind, we can work on stabilizing our attention, and then with a more stable mind, we can work on improving the clarity of our attention. So this is really the order we need to emphasize these qualities. Now, again, we looked at what objects to use in practice. The general recommendation, again, is use the object that works best for you. And it can be one of many different objects. Here in this retreat, we are really focusing on two objects that are very beneficial, particularly for us in our modern society. The first of those, of course, is the breath, which is probably the most widely emphasized object in this training. And within that breath practice, we saw we had three variations. The full body, where we're just noticing sensations anywhere in the body associated with breath. This is very good for working with relaxation, and that's the practice we're going to do this evening. Then we started this afternoon to do the practice of focusing on the area of the abdomen, fairly large area of focus, very good for stabilizing the mind. Again, particularly we can introduce a bit of count in the breath, that can also help to stabilize the mind. Then tomorrow we're going to look at the third variation of the breath practice, focusing in the area of the nostrils here. Very small area of focus, much more subtle object, very helpful for improving clarity of attention. The other object we're going to use on Monday is the mind. Again, I think this is a very suitable object for many of us in our modern society. Even though many of you will probably find that much more challenging than using the breath, because it's not a physical, tangible object, mental, more subtle, and also many of us have a very strong habit of always following our thoughts and emotions and memories and so forth. So to begin to actually observe them as they arise and pass, many of us will find that extremely difficult. But again, there are a lot of benefits to be had in this practice, because with this practice, if we persist with it, we will really become the masters of our mind instead of the slaves of our mind. Instead of being tormented by our mind, getting caught up in this OCD, obsessive compulsive thinking all the time, our mind will naturally become more quiet and still, and we'll be able to simply be present without becoming overwhelmed by any mental events.
So we really will become the masters of our mind. So they're the two objects we're going to be using in this retreat. The tools to use, of course, were the two tools of mindfulness and introspection. Mindfulness being the primary tool, the ability to just hold the object. In the meditation text, sometimes they use a little analogy here. They talk about using the rope of mindfulness. So we are trying to tie our mind with the rope of mindfulness to the observed object, the object we're observing. And then introspection, often we have the analogy of a hook, where if the mind gets dull or distracted, we hook the mind back to the object. So these are the two main tools. Mindfulness is simply holding the object. Introspection is monitoring the mindfulness, quality control. Are we becoming dull or distracted? If we are, then fix our mindfulness, reapply our mindfulness. And then, of course, we saw that we have some certain faults that we need to overcome. The first of those is laziness, of course. And here, really, to help us overcome laziness, if we find that we're lazy in our meditation practice, often it's because we simply do not really appreciate the benefits of the practice. And if we really appreciate the benefits of the practice and we see that there's going to bring us enormous benefit, then of course we're going to have a lot of faith in the practice. That's going to make us aspire to do the practice and put effort into the practice. And then of course, forgetfulness. We have mindfulness to not forget the object. And then introspection to monitor if we're becoming dull or distracted. If we become dull or distracted, then to apply a remedy, to reapply the mindfulness. And of course, if there is no problem, if our focusing well, don't keep adjusting our focus. So these are the faults and antidotes to overcome, and then we can slowly progress in this practice. Any questions about the mindfulness practice? Otherwise, I'll give a little brief summary of the emotional balance from today. So, with the emotional balance, we began by having a look at four types of balance, actually. Because if we really want to get maximum benefit out of our mindfulness training and the emotional balance, we need to have an integrated approach. In particular, initially, we need to cultivate some motivational balance, meaning we need to develop healthy aspirations and desires in our life. Because if we have unhealthy aspirations and desires, then all of this other sort of training really won't get us very far because we're heading in the wrong direction. So of course, with the healthy aspirations and desires there, we had a look at the idea of striving for happiness, and that we talked about these two types of happiness, the temporal happiness or simply pleasure, stimulus-based happiness, nothing wrong with that. But then we really talked about genuine happiness. And that within our healthy aspirations and desires, if we can really reorient our focus towards striving for a genuine happiness rather than simply trying to get more pleasure, I think then a lot of these things are going to really be much more helpful and beneficial in our life. And so we can simply use the temporal happiness, the pleasure, as a basis for striving for genuine happiness. So if we can have those good conditions in our life, then we can use those as a basis for striving for genuine happiness. Genuine happiness, of course, is a state of happiness and well-being that does not require any particular stimulus to be present. It's more about developing our mind through these various practices we are following. So then, of course, on that basis, if we can really have that healthy aspiration and desires in our life, we can then work on attentional balance, the mindfulness training, to really develop a calm, clear, focused mind, develop the ability to see clearly, to focus on everything we experience. And then within that, that can lead to developing these two areas, the cognitive balance, which is to see reality objectively, clearly, without superimposing or projecting a lot of things onto reality. So we need to work here, and then together with that, then we need to work on the emotional balance, and that is to have a good aspect, subjective aspect to our experiences. This ties in very closely to our motivational balance, and here in the emotional balance, we can talk about this is what's called the compassion wing of practice, and we briefly mentioned there are these four qualities that we can develop to really help to develop this emotional balance, that is developing loving kindness, compassion, empathetic joy, and equanimity, these what's called the four immeasurables. And so then today in that the last session of the emotional balance, we looked a little bit at these three poisons, how now we don't really have very much emotional balance, that rather when we engage in any situation, we tend to not respond in a very good, balanced way. We tend to react, and we tend to react out of habits, and many of our habits are bad habits. And from a Buddhist perspective, these reactionary methods of responding to stimulus is really coming down to this fundamental ignorance, this misunderstanding reality, not seeing things clearly, objectively, and therefore, in particular here, really seeing or believing there is an independent me here and an independent objective world out there. So this is the fundamental ignorance that is really leading to this very much emotional imbalance through mental afflictions. So here we see that because of this mistaken view of reality, we tend to end up in these two reactionary patterns. When we have something pleasant happen, we grasp, we have attachment. When something unpleasant happens, we push away, we have aversion. So these are the two primary imbalanced ways of reacting, and then all of our other mental afflictions, such as jealousy and craving and fear, anxiety, depression, all of these come out of one of these or a combination of them. So then what we began to do in the emotional balance training this afternoon is we began to have a look at attachment and how, what it is really, and how it really creates so much harm, and starting to have a look at some ways of working and dealing with attachment. And in particular there, we had a look at the difference between that attachment and loving kindness, or in Sanskrit, maitri, or in Pali, metta. That often these two things are mixed together, and we need to identify them individually, and to try to reduce this attachment as much as possible, and try to increase loving-kindness as much as possible. So, therefore, instead of reacting with attachment and aversion, we can start to respond with cognitive balance, meaning reducing the ignorance, seeing things clearly, and then instead of reacting with attachment and aversion, we can start to respond to situations using loving kindness, compassion, and the other qualities that we're going to look at in the coming days. So this is a little bit what we've been looking at today in terms of the emotional balance. So tomorrow we are going to, in our mindfulness training in the morning sessions, we're going to do a little bit more work with the abdomen and a little bit more advice about how to work on that stability. And then we're going to start to look at the nostrils practice and how to work with that, how to improve clarity of attention, and some more tips and advice about doing the mindfulness practice in general. So that's for the mindfulness tomorrow morning. Then in the afternoon sessions, with the emotional balance, we are going to look at two things. We are going to have a look at anger, and identify really what anger is and how destructive it is, and some ways of dealing with anger. And then on the emotional balance side, we're going to then look more at the second of those four measures of compassion. In particular, we're going to have a look at why is it that we find it difficult to have forgiveness and compassion for people who behave badly. So that's a very important point, and we're going to be looking at that as one of the topics for tomorrow. So that's a little bit a summary of what we did today and what we're going to do tomorrow. Any last questions about that before we have a look at this evening's practice? How much time to... Sorry, what? Oh. I'm going to look at that later, but a brief answer now. One of the sort of catchphrases in terms of meditation is quality over quantity, particularly when we're talking about mindfulness training. It's much better to meditate for 15 or 20 minutes in a focused way than sit there for an hour allowing our mind to just get caught up in dullness and distraction. Because if we do that, we're actually increasing our habit of becoming dull and distracted. So we're sort of working against what we're trying to do. So one of the key things is quality over quantity. And I'm going to talk about some more things that are important there. But one other thing I'd just briefly mention now is, of course, practice is not just meditation, it's what we do for the rest of the day. So we could, in fact, diligently meditate 1 or 2 hours a day, but then the rest of the day, if we run around mindlessly, then we're not going to get very far. So we need to make sure that we have both elements. We have meditative practice, and then we integrate into daily life as well. And we're going to have a look more about that. And I'm going to give some more information about the meditative practice in terms of the length and so forth. That's coming more. Okay. So this evening's practice, and we'll be doing this practice each evening now, in the coming evenings, is we are going to work with the mindfulness practice, particularly emphasizing the relaxation, and we're going to work in the Shavasana, the corpse posture, for a number of reasons. One, of course, it's very good posture to work with for relaxation. And also, particularly if we have some sort of injury or illness where we can't sit up and meditate in the upright posture, then we can simply lie down and meditate, so we can still do our practice. And also, of course, if we want to do some extra meditation in the end of each day, we maybe find we're a bit physically tired from work and so forth, then this is a very good posture to use. And also, it's a very good posture. It's a posture we can use as a transition into sleep. So what we can do at the end of each day is, when we go to bed, is in bed we simply move into the Shavasana posture, lying flat on the back, hands a little bit to the side, legs are a little bit apart, and then we can do this mindfulness practice of simply noticing sensations anywhere in the body as we breathe, emphasizing relaxation. So particularly if you've had a stressful, hectic, tense day, relaxing the body, because that's a very comfortable posture with the body. And then maybe we're still agitated from a lot of things going on in our mind, then we can relax, 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 relax. So not only then is it a mindfulness practice, but it's a good way of unwinding from the end of the day and a good way to transition into sleep. Because sometimes when we go to bed, minds are still churning over from all the things happening during the day, and we're restless and agitated, we can't go to sleep. Whereas if we do this practice, we can really transition a lot better into sleep. If we're using this posture for this purpose, then we can simply do this practice as long as we can maintain some alertness. Once we start to notice we're getting very drowsy, maybe only a couple of minutes, maybe it's 10 minutes, 15 minutes,
Then we can simply mentally note, okay, my meditation is now finished. Then we move out of that posture into whatever posture we sleep in. So then we only associate this posture with meditation. Now you may find this evening, if you've never used this posture for meditation, you may find you just get very drowsy and sleepy. That was my experience when I first used this posture, because I wasn't used to meditating in it. But then I found as I got used to using, I only used this posture for meditation. Then I found quite quickly, actually, I could use this posture, be very relaxed, and still maintain alertness. So much so that now, when I tend to do some meditation retreat, and, you know, sitting quite a number of hours each day, towards the end of the day, you get a little bit, maybe knees start to hurt a little bit, maybe a little bit fatigued. What I tend to do now in retreat is I only use the Shavasana posture for my evening meditation sessions, not just as a transition for bed. So I find them very helpful, and I find that I can really maintain alertness for this in this practice. So again, I'd just like to briefly introduce the practice a little bit more, because Alan Wallace also very much recommends his practice. And then we're going to do the practice. So let's see what he has to say about the practice. Page 19, paragraph 2. Mindfulness of breathing is universally emphasized for those who are especially prone to compulsive thinking. So this was the general recommendation in terms of the objects for mindfulness training, is that if we, a person is always thinking, then probably the best object can be the breath for us. As the 5th century Buddhist master Asanga comments, he's quoting now Asanga, who's a great Indian Buddhist master, he said, "If involuntary thoughts particularly dominate your behavior, then focus the mind in mindfulness of the exhalation and inhalation of the breath." Then he goes on to say, "Since nearly everyone living in the modern world is coping with an overload of thinking, remembering, and planning, this may be just what the doctor ordered, a general prescription for soothing and healing overworked bodies and minds." Although Buddhism generally encourages cross-legged meditation, the Buddha encouraged his followers to practice in any of four postures of walking, standing, sitting, and lying down. Any of these positions is perfectly suitable. Not everyone living in the modern world has the same type of mind or nervous system. If you tend toward excitation, you may find lying down especially helpful for releasing the tightness and restlessness of your body and mind. But if you are more prone to dullness, you may simply fall asleep whenever you lie down. So it may be necessary for you to be upright when meditating. Lying down can also be very useful for meditation if you are physically tired but not yet ready for bed. In this case, you may not be able to rouse yourself to sit upright in a posture of vigilance, but the prospect of lying down for a while may be inviting. Surrender to your body's need to rest and use the supine posture to calm the mind as well. This likely will be much more refreshing and soothing than watching television or reading a newspaper. The supine position, posture, or the corpse posture, Shavasana, may be your only option if you are ill, injured, or frail. It may be especially useful for meditation for those in hospitals, senior care facilities, and hospices. Mindfulness of breathing is great for preparing your mind for mental training, but it can also help you fall asleep. If you suffer from insomnia, the above method can help release tension in your body and mind when you go to bed at night. If you wake up in the middle of the night and have a hard time falling back to sleep, mindfulness of breathing can help you disengage from the thoughts that flood the mind. According to recent studies, 80% of Americans are chronically sleep deprived. So even if all this practice does is help you catch up on your sleep, that's worth a good deal. So that's what we're going to do now is, and we're going to do that each evening at the end of each of these sessions, is we're going to do this meditation using the corpse posture. So you've all got very nice mattresses there. So before you jump off and do that, you can unfold them and then lie down in the corpse posture. But a couple of things first before you do that. I think with this meditation, we can also switch off most of the lights, because if you lie down, eyes open, it's a bit bright. Maybe we can just leave one or two lights on, so maybe the central light or something, and we can switch off most of the rest, so to dim it a bit so it's not so harsh. Also with this, when you're lying down in the corpse posture here, if you find that you just get immediately drowsy, have your eyes open a little bit. Otherwise, if you find comfortable, you can also have your eyes closed. And so we're just going to do a short meditation, maybe 10-15 minutes, using this corpse posture, becoming familiar with it, doing mindfulness training, focusing on sensations of the breath throughout the body. Okay, so find yourself some space. So spread out a little bit. So simply lying on your back, nice and flat, the feet slightly apart, the hands a little bit away from the body, with the palms facing upward. If you find that lying like that, your knees are a little bit hyperextended, and you can also place something under your knees so your legs are not too straight and creating some tension. So as an act of loving kindness for yourself, let go of any external distractions and simply allow your awareness to descend into your body, filling the entire space of your body. Simply becoming aware of sensations throughout the body. In particular, the sensations of where your body is touching the cushion. If you notice any area of tightness or tension in any part of the body, then use the out-breath to breathe into that area, relaxing and releasing that tightness or tension as best you can. and bringing your awareness to the area of your face. Softening and relaxing all the muscles in the face. Mouth and jaw soft and relaxed. Forehead open and spacious. And all the muscles around the eyes soft and relaxed. This way, allowing the entire body to become completely relaxed, completely at ease. And relaxing more deeply with each out-breath. Relaxing and releasing. Allowing the breathing to flow naturally and effortlessly, not trying to manipulate the breath in any way. With each out-breath, letting go of any thoughts that may have arisen, happily releasing them. Simply allowing the mind to come to rest in the present moment. Simply becoming aware of the sensations of the breath throughout the body. Wherever you happen to notice sensations associated with the breathing. Maintaining that ongoing flow of mindfulness, of the sensations of the breath, throughout the entire cycle of each in and out breath. And on each out-breath, relaxing more deeply and releasing any thoughts that may have arisen. You simply become dull or spaced out, then use the in-breath to arouse and refresh your focus on the breath. Using the out-breath to release any tension in the body and to release any thoughts that may have arisen. And to conclude the meditation, we can dedicate all of our efforts from today towards the goal of cultivating mindfulness and emotional balance. In our efforts to strive for genuine happiness, in particular, towards the goal of reducing and eliminating our attachment, and towards the goal of cultivating and increasing the mind of loving kindness for ourselves and others. Time, you can slowly finish the meditation. And to get up, then it's very much recommended to first slowly roll over on your side and then very gently sit up from that position. So no abrupt, sudden, jerky movements when we're sitting up. Very slow and fluid. So we'll leave it there this evening. So you can then set up your meditation cushion as it was before. So remember, tomorrow morning we're doing the sort of full silence. So from when you go to sleep until lunchtime tomorrow, if you can really maintain that silence. So, of course, then no speaking to your roommate. Breakfast will be in silence, morning tea break will be in silence. Particularly we're doing the mindfulness practice tomorrow morning, so you'll find that you'll get much more out of it maintaining that silence. So again, from when you go to sleep until lunchtime tomorrow, we'll adopt the silence. Okay? So have a nice evening. We'll see you tomorrow morning. So remember, tomorrow morning there will be a wake-up gong at about 6:15. And another one at 6:35, and we'll start the meditation in here at 6:45, so don't be late. Okay. See you in the morning.